Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello, and welcome along to episode 38. Of the worst. I'm Guy Montgomery.
I'm Tim. The Frosty Fellas, it seems, Guy, we haven't had any pre-microphone discussion. We just started up the old Skype machine and hit record. Judging by your tone, I think you feel the same way I do. It feels like the Frosty Fellas really got a good licking this time.
Yeah. Often licked, never beaten. That was
not yet,
the 38th million screening of Sex and the City.
It might be 39. Is it definitely 38?
It's 38.
Is it? It's all a haze. It's all a fucking mess, isn't it? It's all a goddamn mess, Monty. How do we get ourselves out of this thing?
Who's counting? Well, you and I should be, because counting is the only way to set ourselves free.
It's true.
Either way, I am in sort of Lake Hayes, which is technically an area in sort of between Queenstown and Arrowtown in the Otago region, the South Island of New Zealand. Tim, presumably stationed as always, Little Empire HQ.
I'm holding guard.
Did you watch the movie last night or this morning?
This morning.
Okay.
How about listening. You?
Yeah, I watched it this morning as well. I couldn't bring myself to do it last night. I just thought, because I feel like if it's the last thing you do, it kind of tarnishes the day.
Ah.
And if it's the first thing you do, yes, it does get the day off to a rough start. But if you do it early enough, there's ample opportunity to win the day back.
Could you not think of it in terms of if you do it so early, it's not even touching the day?
I guess I could, but that to me feels like I am acknowledging I'm in an abusive relationship, because if I do it really early, say, it will, you know, like I could later on in the day, I could be tired or whatever, you know, I could feel like I need a lie down.
Yeah.
And if I wanted my day to move on from having watched Sex and the City that morning, I would say, I'd lie to myself and I'd say, oh, I'm just tired. I go, why am I so tired right now? And I'd shut out the memory of having watched it and I go, oh, I'm just knackered, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Whereas to me, it's somehow healthier to, I don't know, to build it in. I mean, what do you think? Do you think you can watch this movie early enough that it has no impact on the rest of your day? I think that sounds insane.
No, that's not possible, especially at this juncture. I think probably biting it off in two bite-sized pieces is probably the most effective way I've found to do it, but in some ways it's the worst as well. And it also, you sort of brought it to my attention, it kind of is tantamount to cheating. It's at some point you've just got to, I guess, go, hey, this is gonna, it's like a cold shower, but the cold shower lasts for so long, and you've got to do it, you know, multiple times in a week. It's taking a toll, though. There's no doubt about that at all.
Happy to hear it, Tim. What were some of the coping mechanisms you developed for yourself while watching Sex and the City this morning?
It's a broad numbness. It's like an intellectual numbness. It's almost like an accidental form of meditation in some ways now, I think, whereby things are happening on the screen. I've described this before, where it's just, you know, pixelated images moving across an electrified screen with certain impressions being blasted onto my eardrums, but nothing's been interpreted as sound or vision. It's just random nonsense and noise.
So that would mean you withdraw into yourself.
If you can hear that, by the way, there is a dog trying with all his might to bust the door open to come and hang out in here.
Better luck next time, Rufus. Daddy's a little busy being upset right now.
That's right. Dad's at work, Rufus.
So when you describe it as an accidental meditation, because I know exactly what you're saying, but, you know, a single listener who is not watching along might not.
Too busy trying to get Ron Paul to jump in the race, I think.
Yeah, you're doing the Lord's work.
if I know my one libertarian listener.
But so you, it's sort of like, do you find peace and solitude within it, or is it like there's no respite within the meditation? It's just the best means of making sure you don't get angry or weird.
It's not intentional. You're sort of suggesting that it's a choice I'm making. It's not. It's like a very involuntary response that my body and my brain has now to the opening credits. It just shuts down to try and protect itself. I can't open myself up for the hurt anymore. So I just sort of, I don't know, even though the movie's going on, I just kind of shut off to it a bit now. I have to. There's no other way to get through it. It's crazy.
Well,
Especially because I always watch it with headphones in, so it's incredibly inescapable. It's like right there burrowing into my brain.
I've done that a few times just for a change of pace, and it certainly is confronting, but that's too much for me. So did you miss me?
Of course. Yeah, I missed you. Hey?
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I just missed anyone being there, really. Like,
It's usually me, so that means you did miss me.
I did miss you. I absolutely missed you being there alongside for the watch in my side cart in this motorcycle destined for
hell. I missed you.
That's nice.
My mum came in. I was watching it. I'm at my mum and dad's house, and I'm just staying in one of their spare rooms, and I watched it, and mum came in, and you know, there was a time in my life and in the arc of the podcast where she'd, you know, be curious or incredulous or deride me,
mm-hmm.
but just not even sympathy, but just like sort of
disdain,
you know, not disdain, just
indifference.
Like, almost, like neutral indifference. Just like, yeah, that's what you do. That's part of your life.
How did that make you feel?
Worse.
Yeah.
Worse, because, you know, it's like there's a time when the people who love you, they care about you and they fight for you. And then eventually, if you keep making the same mistakes, you know, they have to look after themselves at some point. And,
that's right.
You know, it's not their responsibility. And so to see that she's crossed over into that sort of area, I'm not going to lie to you, Tim, it genuinely did not feel good. I mean, totally valid, and, you know, it's a miracle it took this long. I didn't get word from Stephen, so I did time it so I got a quick little break where I could go upstairs, fix myself a coffee and some breakfast.
Nice.
And In doing that, Dad was on the phone. We haven't spoken yet this morning. But I would actually, it would be a valuable input, because I feel like he would still deride us. He would at least have the goodwill and good grace to be really rude about it towards me. He really likes you, so probably not towards you, but if you just imagine all the rudeness directed towards me is for both of us.
And that's better, is it? Your dad being derisive towards you is better than Charlotte's indifference.
It just gives me something to come up against.
Do you call her Mummy Montgomery? Is that a name that gets thrown around at all?
Absolutely. All the time.
Yeah,
big time. I also call my dad Mummy Montgomery.
That's confusing. You need some difference between the two so people know which one you're talking about.
They look different.
I see.
I know who I'm talking about. Yeah. So, I mean, I imagine, yeah, to a listener who doesn't have visual cues to go off, it could be very confusing. But no, I call all members of my family Mummy.
Mummy Montgomery.
I honestly find that question so disgusting. The only response I could think of was accepting it. Do you call your parents Mummy?
No. No.
Bubby?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last Bubby time I would call... What's that, sorry?
Bubby?
Bubby. No, maybe I should introduce Bubby. Is Bubby not Grandma, though?
Yeah, but it's just something that is so rank to me about... I don't know what it is.
About Mummy.
It's not alliteration. Yeah, it's about Mummy. But Bubby, you know, I think it is. I think it is Mummy. It's Mummy and Daddy as an adult. Even actually in children, I understand, you know. It's nice. It's affectionate. But it's...
What's it about?
Mummy. Mummy.
What is it? Why do we need to sort of elongate words when Daddy. Kids are little like that?
It's sort of... The tone of it suggests... an entitled ask for Mummy. Yeah. You know, it's like
you need the second syllable just to get the swing on it, because you can't do that with the word mum. Mum. Oh, no, you can. Mum.
I think, I can't imagine this, I'm not a parent, but as a parent, I think it would be, who's to say? You know, mum is all business. Mummy is a beg.
Yeah, that's true.
Look at us, man. We are really...
Yeah, it's not going well. Can I ask this question? Do you even know what you would want your parents to react to you at this part of the journey? Like, what would be the ideal relationship
Anything.
They would have?
That's why I want Dad to come in and say, what are you doing, boy? What are you doing, boy? When I was your age, I don't know what he was doing. He was probably jogging.
Yeah, you get out there. You get your shoes on every now and then.
There's no set response. It's more just like it was something to play against. It was a moment of respite from the film. And so I talked about it, because if I didn't talk about that to him, I was going to talk about the movie. And while I have got some stray observations, and it did stir some feelings in me, the overwhelming one, as I think it is for you, was just like a sense of, you know, drowning in an ocean.
That's it. Drowning.
Of like, it's just this vast ocean of nothingness, this movie. You know, you just swim around from, like, you know, what is it even? Are they life rafts? Are they bits of driftwood that you can hang on to? You can dig your nails into for a second before it slips away? What I wouldn't give for a friendly pod of dolphins to swim by.
But it's less exciting than drowning. It's like dying in a desert, I think.
Okay, well, if nothing else, you have opened up an interesting hypothetical here. Would you rather... I think you've answered it. You'd rather die drowning than in the desert?
Good question. I think drowning's just so traumatic, isn't it?
What is trauma in the face, you know, in death? If it is certain death you're facing... It's difficult to get too bogged down and worrying about the trauma.
I guess you're right. But in terms of if we're going to pick one, I think I'd rather be in the water for a couple of reasons. Number one, it feels like there's more hope associated with that situation.
Certain death.
Okay, like that's guaranteed. So I'm in like a big, open, cold body of water. There's nothing. But I wouldn't know that, would I? I wouldn't, like, I could hold out some hope that maybe a big
that's true.
Or a helicopter or something could go by. Like, I don't know what's up. Whereas in a desert, I feel like you can see for so far that you know your peril is imminent.
But the ocean is bigger than the desert.
But you can't, you're thrashing around. You can't see, you can't get a good, like, picture of it all. You can't drink
of what?
It all in. Of if there's anything that's there to help you.
Where?
On the desert. In the desert, you can see for a really long way to see that nothing is going to help you survive and keep living. In the ocean, you are thrashing around trying to survive. And number one, it's going to like expend all your energy a lot quicker, so you'll probably die a huge amount faster. Plus, you'll freeze to death probably. But also, you kind of can't get that good, you know, lookout for a long way in all directions. So it's like, maybe a helicopter.
You can. All you see is the horizon. You just see the sea for as far as it stretches until it meets the horizon.
What if it's choppy out?
Terrifying. If it's choppy out, then you see it over waves as you're desperately trying to bob your head. Neither
of
these are desirable. Bold decision making by two featured extras. Well, one featured extra, the other I don't know that they would have had their name in the credits. Stanford and Carrie are on the phone. It's New Year's Eve. It's after that actually. It's during the countdown when we see Stanford and Anthony decide to kiss. And
I'm also
of course
there.
Our focus is on that kiss between those two characters because why wouldn't it be? It's what the camera's pointed at. They're the only characters in that scene who we are familiar with. But as you and I well know, there's often something a little bit more intriguing happening just around the corner, just there in the background. And to the left of our characters, there is a woman who is celebrating New Year's, and as the clock strikes zero, she throws herself with notable and commendable vigor towards an unseen figure, tall enough, you know, that she has to look up at him. I'm assuming it's a fella. And the two of them, I don't know if they decided this before the take, but go for it. Stanford and Anthony, they share, you know, a kiss which says, hey, you're here, it's New Year's, this is tradition, it's quite nice, this could lead to something more. Their kiss is loaded with unbridled passion. These two people know a lot more about the rest of their night than Stanford and Anthony know about theirs. The mystery's gone, the intrigue is gone, these guys are going to get down and dirty, they're going to fuck.
And that's really cool. Let's dig into that. I actually weirdly don't know who you're talking about, which shocks me to my very core. So I don't have a good picture in my head of them. How old are they, do you think? Early 30s?
Yeah, I reckon probably mid-30s. Like, I mean, how old are Stanford and Anthony?
Because
is it a society party?
Yeah, it probably is, if Stanford Blatch is there.
Does that mean that they, you know, it's other people of their age and of their ilk? Or does it mean that they're just... Because it's like a public space, so it could just be populated by anyone.
Yeah, true. I think you get a pretty wide spectrum, Monty, at those sorts of shindigs, because you get artisans and captains of industry from across the spectrum of age.
Okay, well, I guess maybe they're a bit younger. I reckon, yeah, probably early 30s.
Early 30s, they know how to fuck, they know how to make a partner feel good in bed. They've done
the rounds. Well, yes, but you don't get to see a lot of the guy. You see, like, his hand, you see quite a nice-looking wristwatch, a shirt cuff, and a jacket. Mm-hmm. And with her, you see her, she's, like, really putting herself out there. She's, you know, she's holding, like, a half-full glass of, from memory, either wine or punch. It's in a wine glass, and she's sort of sloshing it around like she's had a few.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an excitement to their kiss and to tremendous. They probably both knew it was going to happen, but have been hanging out for New Year's, so as not to go out on too far of a social limb. But almost the excitement and revelry suggests to me that they might be too drunk to truly enjoy. I mean, and for all we know, this isn't their first time. Maybe they're a couple, but no, they don't give off the feeling of a couple. It feels like a New Year's union. Honestly,
yeah,
knowing that Stanford and Anthony get married, but even to remember it now, this scene, while there is much more passion in the kiss between this woman and her unseen partner, I would, if I was a betting man, I would lay odds on Stanford and Anthony for having a better night that night, and probably having better odds for the relationship to last.
You think Stanford and Anthony do? Or that
they're just the way they're going about it. There's a bit more maturity.
Sure.
Neither of them appear to be quite as inebriated, which means they're probably, they have more autonomy over their decision making. They're more in control of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to go against reveling in the occasion of New Year's Eve or any party that you might go to, but I just think, slow and steady wins the race.
The trajectory of not always, in the trajectory of their relationship, Stanford and Anthony, we see them kiss, which is quite a big deal because they kind of hate each other. I think maybe in the show.
Do you know? I mean, we don't know that. The only reason you and I think that, or even know that, is because at the start of Sex and the City 2, the movie, they are. And honestly, this information to me feels embroiled in the red herring that Samantha Jones was going to get married. Because you know how in Sex and the City 2, they did like stage shoots with her in a wedding dress to throw everyone off the scent?
Mm.
So they keep playing that up when they're choosing, wherever Bergdorf Goodman, I can't remember what they're there for, but they go, hell just froze over the idea of them getting married. But that's about as much information we have that they don't like each other.
Because if that's true, then we have a TV show where they hate each other. We have that brief kiss, and then the next thing we know, they're getting married in the largest wedding New York City's ever seen.
Well, this is, I mean, I've spoken about this, there's more than just this kiss.
Of course you've spoken about this, Monty. We've seen this film approaching 40 times.
Yeah, there's a moment where they sort of appear to share a connection or chemistry at that sort of Denny's-style diner at the end of the film when they're both celebrating that.
That's it. We get a kiss at midnight, a fleeting kiss, a look during the ending credit sequence, basically, and then they're getting married.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. That's all we have. Those are the breadcrumbs that lead to a huge wedding.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, that's really cool, man. I'm glad you found a couple who are going to copulate, probably, to usher in the new year. A special thing in New York City where it gets cold at that time of the year.
I do what I can.
Actually, my shining light guy, thanks for asking, is another couple, funnily enough. One that I haven't paid a lot of attention to before, but this scene I sort of zoned in on a bit more than usual. It is Samantha Jones in an aeroplane, finishing her dessert, going back to Los Angeles, presumably with it in her head that she knows she's got to now break up with Smith Jarrett after having a chat to her gal pals. And in that first class cabin, the first thing I noticed is Samantha has bought a seat for her bag and her pup, which is just... I wanted to talk about money for a moment, because this woman was going to pay $50,000 for a ghastly ring, and it just blows my mind. Carrie Bradshaw... I was trying to think of all the things in this movie that have a named price. We know that Carrie Bradshaw bought shoes that were $525 and then forgot about them, left them in the closet. We know that she also brought a cushion, one single cushion on a sofa, that cost $300. And we know that Samantha Jones was in the bidding for a rather hideous ring, which appears to be made with cubic zirconia as the featured gemstone. You suckers, you ladies. And got in a bidding war against her partner, was going to pay $50,000 for it, and he ended up paying that amount. It's just a world.
He paid 60.
Did he? Oh yeah. Sorry, 50 fucking thousand.
50 was her limit, and
Yes. Is it not? Is it 55 or is it 60? It doesn't matter. Fuck me, it doesn't matter. But I'm just curious. Oh no.
So what's your
oh yeah, my shining light. So anyway, well, no, there's a cut. What? There's well, no you point. I was just saying that we'll everything's crazy.
Oh, okay, man, you're upset.
It's just such huge amounts of money for such weird shit. $500 shoes, a $300 cushion, a ring that costs maybe $55,000, maybe $60,000.
But
you
know,
anyway,
that is just. I know it's insane, it's absurd, that is you and I, you know, you just add an extra three zeros onto everything, but that's, you know, you or I looking at some knick-knack in a novelty store and going, yeah, I'll spend $30 on that. That's what $30,000 is to them.
I guess so. The shining light is the couple that sat behind Samantha Jones on that flight. They're cool. They're, I think, probably together romantically, but it's a little bit ambiguous. It could be a work trip. Maybe it's the start of something. It could actually be either a similar or the exact same couple from the New Year's party. You know?
I'm actually, Tim, to be honest, I'm skimming through this file so I can see who they are.
Good stuff. So this is, of course, the magic scene where, and I've talked about it before, the flight attendant who takes the pudding off of Samantha when she's furiously trying to get it down her gob to get every last calorie in, who is so funny. That flight attendant just puts a great performance in.
I don't know if you've got a different screen, but I don't even get to see a couple. I just see a woman in a window seat.
There's a guy. Are you kidding me, man? What fuckery is this? Now I've got to figure out how to watch the movie while I've got you on my phone.
No, it's okay. I can describe it to you. There's two guys who are sitting in the row in front of Samantha Jones talking to each other. They look
they
could be in business or they could be involved. And then there's one woman in a window seat who's sorting out her hand luggage because the plane's landing, I guess. And that's all you get. There's no couple to speak of.
Wait, sorting out her luggage? Hold on. No, before... Wait a minute. What scene are you in? The one where she gets her dessert taken off her.
Exactly.
There's a man and a woman behind Samantha.
Oh, do you know what? Yeah, you're right.
Thank
I
God.
Far back.
Jesus Christ, that scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Now that I see how much of them
oh,
you see,
dude.
I understand Oof. That. Absolutely.
Woof.
Oh, man. Do you know what?
Scary
this is a nice.
Stuff.
This is a really nice find because the shot really goes past them, and they both have a lot of decisions to make as performers. She's not doing a hand luggage; she's putting away her headphones, and he sort of looks. I think he looks well rested. He's just handing over a mug like he's had a cup of coffee, but I also reckon he's probably had a few vinos.
What a champ. Is that how you look well rested? Just slam a vino or two?
He's just in a big comfy seat on an airplane. He's being very well taken care of by the first class cabin staff. He's got a big puffy pillow on his right shoulder.
What's your take on their relationship, Guy? Do you think they are
honestly,
or leisure?
They could even be strangers, and I'm watching the tape over and over here because his body language, like, they've got different body language. I reckon he's probably a skeezy businessman looking, you know, maybe flying away from his family to go on a business trip and looking for, you know, a romantic dalliance. He's not to, you know, make all businessmen skeevy creeps, but...
That's awful.
He's so laid back. She's got legs crossed. Her body language is pointing away from him as she puts away the headphones. I would love to talk to these two to know what they thought their relationship was. Or it's not even thought for them, I guess. They know. Oh, no. Do you know? Because if you keep going and you don't see him in frame anymore. Oh, my God. The mystery deepens. She looks at him. She looks at him as though to say, oh, yeah. But, like, it's not even necessarily the look of a couple. It's her looking like... Nah, they're not together. He said something creepy. This guy's bad news, and we need to get him off the flight.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, what's he done?
I don't know, but it's you know, the plane's landing, so thank the Lord it's over soon.
Chuck him in. Biff him in coach, you know?
Yeah, put him
get
in coach.
Put him in plane prison. Coach. This is what happens to you if you're in first class, then you start upsetting people in there. They chuck you in with the great unwashed.
What a punishment.
In with Timbo.
They don't even put you in premium economy. They just kick you straight down to the bottom of the barrel. They put
Have you ever sat next to someone on a plane in cabin where either they've fuck this shits me, reclined back, someone who's sitting in front of you, or someone who's just to the side of you who chews completely with their mouth open? Those are employees of the airline. And if you're in that seat, you have either unwittingly been put in plane prison or you've accidentally put yourself in plane prison. But those seats are supposed to be reserved for naughty first class customers.
I love that theory. You mean to tell me planes are so... This is like... Fuck. That really makes me cross. And it's
Chill
totally believable.
It's true. It's true.
What a job.
Yeah.
Would you do that for the right amount?
Yeah, absolutely. I put it in the same basket as people who do like science experiments themselves, or not science experiments, medical experiments for money. It would kind of be like that. It's like pretty lowbrow sort of effort, not a lot of effort. You just sort of sit there and be annoying and you get paid for that. Not bad.
That's the sort of job that I used to find desirable as, you know, like a teenager, late teen, early 20s sort of young guy even. You know, the idea of a work where I didn't have to extend myself in any way mentally or physically was the dream. But then in like doing promo and various different jobs which kind of fulfilled that brief, I learned it's actually not the dream because you just have too much time to think. And often what you're thinking about is, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
It's the George Costanza problem where the amount of trouble it takes to make it feel like you're not working, if you just applied that to working, you'd probably be happier.
I'd like to stay
in that particular time of the movie, Tim. You described, so it's Samantha's not actually flying back to LA to break up with Smith. She's flying back to New York having just broken up with Smith.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
and I want
really?
To know, yeah, and I want to know how you feel about this. So I was shocked to discover today that after Steve and Miranda get together, which is a moment I'm on the record as enjoying, and I didn't mind it today either, there is still 30 minutes of movie to go. And I don't know if it's because I associate with that storyline the most, and I feel like that's the natural conclusion of the film. But that just seemed so disrespectful to me. So they resolved that, and there was 30 minutes to go. I thought, that's all right. And then, you know, there are these benchmarks you hit on the home stretch. So you've got, you know, by this point, in my mind, I'm like, I've got to wait for Miranda and Steve to get back together. I've got to wait for Samantha to figure out she needs to break up with Smith and actually go through with breaking up with Smith. I need Charlotte and Harry to have a baby. And I need Carrie to go back. Yeah. But this, you know, like this all feels like the home stretch. But it is a lot of action to get through still. And I need Carrie to go back to her apartment, be reunited with Big, him propose, they get married at the City Hall, and then them to have a meal. And then you're done. And 30 minutes after the first false ending, Return of the King, Miranda and Steve reunited. And then by the time that Samantha's dumped Smith and returned to New York, I'm thinking, okay, well, surely we're down to 20 minutes. Mm. It's only 25 minutes.
I get it when Louise leaves, and I think it's like a good 45 minutes left at that point.
This movie is like, it's like you know, there's just all this stuff left in the tank. It's like in a car when you look at the petrol tank and you think, oh no, it looks like I'm out of petrol. I better get this to the station. But it just keeps going. It just keeps
but
going.
But in a worse way. It's like the gauge is showing it full or something, but it stops working. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's in the inverse.
I know what you mean.
But oh, Guy, what are we going to do with this, eh?
Well, I will say this. I admire Samantha's confidence.
With what? In general?
Well, yeah, in general. There's one moment that made me think of it, but to be honest, it stems from admiring her general confidence. So when she's on the phone to Carrie...
You were right to keep talking. I wasn't going to ask you a question. I just don't want to talk about the movie, eh?
Oh, dude, it's okay. I got great instincts. Yeah. She's on the phone to Carrie. It's Valentine's Day. She is making sushi for Smith and talking to Carrie, and Carrie's talking to her. And she's on speakerphone, which is still available on mobiles. But, you know, speakerphone, the advent of speakerphone on the home phone console was a pretty exciting time.
Huge.
But it means that her hands are free to continue making sushi. And I just admire, you know, like as someone who's not a super confident cook, I'm good. There's a few dishes I can cook really well, but like if I'm learning a new dish, all of my energy and concentration has to go into that. And we know that Samantha and Smith did a sushi making course once. That would not embolden me to think I know how to make sushi, certainly not confidently enough that I could do it without even really paying attention. Like I could do it as second nature, that I have the muscle memory in me to roll up a delicious maki roll. Like she's on the phone to Carrie while making the sushi, and she's like, all of her attention is going into the conversation. All of her secondary attention is going to the sushi. And yes, the roll that she's making turns out to be disastrous. But I admire anyone.
We see the result of the split focus.
I admire anyone who has the self-confidence to just, you know, like, you actually have it. You're like, yeah, I can do that. I'm always like, no, you know. Or if I'm preparing a meal, like I can't talk to anyone, I can't let anyone know I'm preparing it. It's like I'm hiding a dirty little fucking secret, you know, until it comes out successfully. I feel like I have to hide the information from everyone, because then that creates more pressure, it makes me more nervous.
I mean, that's cute.
That's what that is.
I was looking for the word. It's adorable.
I'd love to be a Samantha in that situation.
You're a bit of a foodie, though. I feel like you're quite ambitious with the meals you're trying to make. And so is she. That role does turn out bad. But making sushi seems hard. Looks hard to me.
Yeah, it looks hard to me, too.
Fucking Tim, hard.
Neither of us have anything to say.
No.
We're not enjoying ourselves.
Absolutely. You're dead right.
What do you reckon?
Right,
we get out of here.
Yeah, should we just end it? I guess this episode is just proof that we watched it. Some of them are comedy, some of them are reviews, some of them is just proof and evidence on the record that we watched.
I'm going to be by your side for the next one, and we're going to do something to really fucking shake things up, man.
I tell you what, I tell you what. What the fuck did we just watch in Patreon?
Oh, Bucky Larson.
Bucky Larson. Okay. So here's the thing, folks. Unless you're listening to this on Patreon, because people on Patreon who support us to the tune of $5 a month or more get these episodes ad-free and a day earlier than everyone else. And if you're doing that, thank you so much. If you're not, consider supporting us on there. Because, again, if you're a $5 or plus Patreon pal, you get access to our Patreon watches. And we just watched Bucky Larson, which was a fucking romp. Really interesting. Interesting movie, very interesting chat off the back of that. Guy and I sort of laying eyes into ourselves and the entertainment industry. And if you give $10 a month or more on the Patreon powers, you get to be part of the Deciders Club and actually figure out what movie we're going to watch next. It's jolly good fun over there. This is more like the desert where we're dying slow, painful death and no one's coming to help us. The Patreon is a traumatic ocean where there's a bit of excitement. There's the odd shark. There's a bit more to look at, a bit more to do. Either way, we're both dying, but yeah. Bad analogy?
Great. I don't mind it, mate. Do you have anything you want to promote?
I think I just did.
Yeah, I actually am not going to promote any of my live shows on the back of this podcast.
Fair enough.
I feel like that would be counterintuitive.
If you want to see anything, though, go to littleempirepodcast.com/live.
No.
It's just a good umbrella one, you know?
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair.
Okay, enough. Guy, here's what we're going to do to end the episode, Guy. We're going to say, I'm going to say three nice things about you, and you can do whatever you want. You don't have to say, you can just end it if you want. I'm going to say, Guy Montgomery, my friend, is a good cook. I've had your cooking. It's delicious. And I'm sorry it stresses you out, but it gets great results. Number two, Guy Montgomery is a great friend. He looks out for his mates, really cares about people, he does. And number three, Guy Montgomery is really, really adorable with young children. Very cute. Hey, someone get this guy a baby.
I will say this for you, Tim. Tim mixes, edits, and uploads all of the podcasts.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.